is Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
This hour of Wyman and Bob is brought to you by Oswego Mortgage. It's always a pleasure to talk Seahawks football with this guy. You read his stuff at ESPN.com. Does a great job covering the Seahawks for ESPN, and he's with us now. Our very own Brady Henderson is here. Brady, how are you, man?
One moment. Brady has requested an entrance song.
Uh-oh.
Is this an inside joke I don't know about?
He was talking about this band last time.
This is Bob Stelton's band.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mara probably thinks I've gotten too big for my britches when I ask her to give me a walk-up song when I come on the show. But anyway,
how's it going, guys?
Listen to Bobby. Listen to him wailing.
Yeah.
Just picture the long hair.
Yeah, really long hair.
Tight pants.
Really tight pants, yeah.
Yeah, like Spinal Tap.
I didn't have the cucumber wrapped in foil. Oh, Brady, how are you, man?
I'm doing okay. How are you guys doing?
We're good. Hey, let me ask you something. We were just talking in the last segment. We're going to do this every day. We're going to go through the Seahawks free agents, of which there are 24, and we're going to take a look at a couple each day and just basically, with a business sense, say they stay or they go. And we're going to work our way up from the bottom to the more notable names. But today we looked at defensive end DeMontre Moore, defensive end Jonathan Bullard, and safety Lano Hill. And between Dave and I, the only guy staying is DeMontre Moore. What would you say, stay or go on those three?
Yeah, I mean, those are all guys that I'm sure that they would like to have back, but probably on something close to minimum contracts. And so, I don't know how big of a decision that's going to be for them. I know that, you know, talking to people in the building, I know that they were, you know, as recently as this past summer, they were still high on Lano Hill, you know, thinking that he could develop into a good player. And but, I mean, I think that if any of those guys are back, it's going to be on, you know, pretty – you know, low risk 1 year deals for something at the minimum or pretty close to it. But yeah, I could see, you know, DeMontre Moore was a pretty good player for them, at least early in the season before he got hit with that suspension. He was actually making some plays for them, and which was impressive because he showed up right before the season started and really didn't have, I don't believe he had much of an off season. So he would be probably the guy that I would imagine they would want back most.
Yeah, I loved him, just his hustle. I mean, look, he's not some guy that you're going to break the bank for, but yeah, there's going to be no shortage of things to write about, Brady, with all the free agents going on. What's of all of the areas, whether it's, you know, defensive back, you know, what do you do with KJ? Where do you think is going to be the most interesting to watch, where the Seahawks might, you know, surprise us with something?
Well, I know that Jamal Adams is not a free agent, but I would imagine that whatever, however much money they'd have to pay him is going to impact what else happens in free agency with, you know, with the Chris Carson and Shaquille Griffin and KJ Wright, guys like that. I mean, cause I would imagine that Jamal re-signing him, extending him has got to be their top priority. And that's such an interesting deal because you could look at, okay, is that deal going to be at the top of the safety market, which is going to be about $16 million. Or I imagine that after a 9.5 sack season, he's going to want to get paid more like a pass rusher.
Oh,
so
boy.
I could see that deal, you know, it going, I could see a pretty wide range of what that deal ends up at. And then I could also see that impacting some of their free agents. And so I've got a story, I think, coming up tomorrow about KJ Wright. I think that's a fascinating situation just because they've seen that he can play the strong side and play it pretty well. But you've also seen that, you know, there's a report from Josina Anderson, saying that he wants a deal that is, matches his production, which I take that to mean he's not interested in giving the Seahawks a hometown discount. And the question I have there is, you know, they kept KJ on the field with Bobby Wagner this season on passing downs like they usually do. And that meant taking Jordan Brooks off the field. Well, they didn't draft Jordan Brooks in the first round to, you know, only play him less than half the snap. So I would imagine that they want to get Brooks on the field more next year. and that would probably come at the expense of KJ Wright's playing time. And if he's going to be something closer to a part-time player, how's that going to impact how far they're willing to go to re-sign him?
Yeah, that's it. Back to Jamal for a moment. I get that, man, that could be ultimately a really expensive deal. Two questions on that. A, can they get everything done, and that includes obviously Jamal, get everything done without restructuring the bigger contracts or one of the, whether it's Bobby or whether it's Russell? And two, you have any doubts about their ability? I mean, you committed way too much draft capital in acquiring Jamal Adams not to re-sign him, so there's zero doubt in my mind they get it done. But do you expect that to be problematic, something that drags out for a while?
Well, let me make one counterpoint to that. I know from talking to people in the building at the time they made that trade, that was a question I had too, is it seems like a pretty big risk to trade that much, give up that much for a guy, and to not sign him to an extension right away. And you know, you understand the flip side of that too, which is they want to make sure they know what they have in Adams, you know, from how he fits into their defense, how he fits into their locker room. That was part of it. They also wanted to see, they wanted to have a better idea of what the NFL salary cap was going to look like, you know, how much it was going to drop, you know, so they know what the financial landscape is like before they commit this huge amount of money to a guy. But from what I understand, their thought process at the time was, okay, they're going to wait to do the deal. And worst case scenario, if they can't get a deal done, they could trade him and still get something pretty big in return. I mean, in their minds, you know, last offseason, he went for 2 first round picks and then some. He was, you know, 24 years old. So if they couldn't get a deal done with him, he'd be 25 years old coming off, you know, probably another strong season. So he would, you know, maybe they would be able to get back something pretty strong in return, maybe even a first round pick that's better than one of the first rounders they gave up. So how that affects this season, you know, the here and the now, is I think that gives them incentive. That line of thinking suggests to me that they're going to want to try to do a deal as early as possible, knowing that if they can't get a deal done, now then you trade him, and you know, you need that draft capital, whatever you could get in return for him. You need that now. You need that before this year's draft, where you're entering without a first or a third round pick. By the way, no compensatory picks either. So I think that gives them incentive to try to do a deal as quickly as possible with Jamal, knowing that if they can't, then the alternative is to trade.
I loved Jamal, listening to him talk. Everything that he had, I ate it up. I loved, you know, how he played. But what do you think's going to happen? What's your kind of prediction based on, you know, asking him questions and everything, Brady? I mean, do you think it could get ugly, or how do you think this is going to go down with Jamal Adams? Pretty fiery guy.
Yeah, I think the tricky part is, you know, the Seahawks are going to say, you're a safety. That's the position you've always been with for that. And Jamal Adams and his agent are going to say, well, I'm only a safety in name. I play more like an edge rusher. I had 9.5 sacks, you know, by the way, the most by a defensive back in NFL history. And I also played in the box more than your average safety. And so that's where I think that's the obvious, you know, sticking point or potential sticking point of this negotiation. And the Seahawks are going to say, no, you're a safety. Safeties get paid, you know, around $15 million. That's the top of the market there. And he's going to say, no, I'm a pass rusher, and pass rushers get paid $20 million. And so, you know, maybe the resolution is somewhere in the middle. And I think that the Seahawks could justify that. You know, Bobby Wagner makes $18 million a year. I think you could say that Jamal Adams has a pretty similar impact on games as Bobby Wagner. So just from a price standpoint, you know, not factoring in the position and what the position tends to make. If you just look at the impact, you could justify something, you know, $17.5-18 million. But is that going to be good enough for Jamal Adams? I don't know that. I know he's a pretty headstrong guy, and a guy who, you know, showed that he was willing and capable of forcing his way out of New York. And so, I don't think this is going to be an easy negotiation. And the other part of that is, you know, the salary cap, as I mentioned, is dropping. And, you know, teams have, you know, agents always say, you know, well, my guy should make more than the last guy because the salary cap goes up. So they adjust deals for inflation. Well, the question is, do you now adjust deals for deflation? I'm sure the Seahawks are going to try to say that. And I don't know if Adam's agent is going to go for that.
Let me ask you about something we've heard a bit about over the past few days, and that is Chris Carson and some I guess, are monitoring his Twitter account pretty closely because they're saying, hey, he unfollowed the Seahawks or he unfollowed Russell. Or I don't know who he followed to begin with and who he does or does not follow now. Any reason to believe he's got an issue with the team to where that would be true? And then the more important question is, do you think they commit, you know, what in his mind it's going to take to bring him back for a guy who we love when he's on the field? There's no debating his talent. He's just proven he can't be counted upon for 16 games. He has yet to do it in any single year of his career. How much does that hinder what he wants versus what they're willing to pay?
Yeah, I kind of look at him in a similar way as Jaren Reed last year, and you can maybe put Shaquille Griffin in this category too. Is, you know, a guy that they let, you know, the guy that they, I'm sure they really wanted back, but you know, they let Jaren Reed, remember, test free agency, or I believe he you know, tested the, you know, 48-hour negotiating window, and then I think he re-signed with the Seahawks right before that. So you know, the fact that they let both of those guys, you know, Carson and Griffin, get to, you know, play out the final year of their rookie deal, and from what I understand, they did not make a serious attempt to re-sign either of those guys last offseason. So I mean, they're you know, necessarily saying that they're willing to lose those guys, or they're, you know, they didn't make it as much of a priority to re-sign those guys as they have other players that they've done, you know, after three seasons. But I think that they would definitely want those guys back. I think it's just going to be a situation where, you know, they look that, you know, they let the market come to them, and you know, they sign those guys at their price as opposed to the player's price. And, you know, with Carson, that's an interesting situation because there's so many other running backs who are hitting the market this offseason. Kenyon Drake, you know, a lot of guys from that 2017 draft class, and then, you know, an older guy, Mark Ingram, who's now hit that market as well. There's a lot of running backs from that 17 draft class that are going to be free agents. So maybe an ideal situation for the Seahawks, not that this would be ideal for Carson, but an ideal situation for the Seahawks is that market is so saturated that, you know, it drives down the price of everybody, and maybe they could get him back at a reasonable deal, something that's, you know, closer to their price, and something that reduces the risk that they would take with a guy who was, you know, an excellent player for them, but as you mentioned, has had a hard time staying on the field.
Hey, Brady, I know you get feedback on the articles you write at ESPN.com. We get the texters texting in. I'm just wondering if we've seen more of an overreaction, because I'll sort of just summarize that all of a sudden Russell is too short again and Pete is old. You know, that kind of is what's coming through. And, you know, it just seemed, I'm not sure if you've gotten the similar type of reactions, because, yeah, I mean, all of a sudden, yeah, these things that have been sort of dispelled are coming back up again because of the nature of that loss in the playoffs.
Yeah, I haven't heard the one about Russell being too short again. That's an interesting one. I've not heard that one. But, no, I mean, I think that, you know, when you lose the game in the fashion that they did, everybody's going to be looking for answers, and everybody's going to want to point the finger. I mean, I think that the issues in that game in particular, there were several of them. I don't think that they had a good enough game plan to beat the Rams with the way that they were trying to play that game. And I think that, you know, the offensive line got overwhelmed and overmatched. And it was, you know, it was kind of a similar story in the Week 16 game against the Rams. And, you know, I think that for all the conversation that, you know, everybody is having about the offensive coordinator and what they need to do there, I think that a big priority this offseason, to whatever degree they can with limited resources, should be to beef up the interior of their offensive line. I think their offensive line was better for the most part for much of this season, but you saw in the last two games against the Rams, Wilson was sacked 5 times in each game, and he was pressured on exactly half of his dropbacks in that wild card loss. And so I think that they need to build their offensive line with an idea of Aaron Donald from taking a game over. That's obviously much easier said than done, but I do think that was a big card loss. It was, they couldn't block, and I think there still plays as though they could block him.
Brady Henderson of ESPN.com is our guest here with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Brady, of the names we've heard thrown around for offensive coordinators, potential for the Seahawks, who stands out to you? And if you say Adam Gase, we're not going to be able to be friends anymore.
No, Adam Gase does not stand out to me. And I don't, you know, I don't doubt for 1 minute that they talked to him in some capacity, as my colleague Jeremy Fallon reported.
Jeremy is one of the more plugged in reporters that I know. So I don't doubt his reporting there, but I don't think that them talking to Gase in whatever capacity that they talk to him is indicative of him, of Gase being anywhere near the top of their list. So I, as excited as I'm sure you were, Bob, about the prospects of Adam Gase being up as the coordinator, I don't get the sense that that is highly likely at this point.
That's a shame.
Yeah, I mean, Doug Peterson, I think, would be a nice fit for the Seahawks. I could see why the Seahawks would want Doug Peterson. I don't know how much sense it would make for Doug Peterson, even with the Northwest ties. Obviously, you know, he's from Ferndale and all that. But you know, the way I understand it, the issue that, you know, where things went south with him in Philadelphia was he felt like the GM and the owner were breathing down his neck. And encroaching on his space and not giving him the kind of latitude that a Super Bowl winning coach deserves. And, you know, I could see him looking at what just happened between Brian Schottenheimer and Pete Carroll and saying, you know, that's a situation that I'm a little bit wary of. If the head coach is going to have such a specific idea in mind for how he wants his offense run, I could see that maybe turning off, you know, a guy like Doug Peterson, who, you know, should be in pretty good position to, you know, maybe even if he sits out this offseason, which it sounds like he might be leaning towards that, you know, maybe he can position himself for something more next season as opposed to, you know, taking a job right now where he's going to be, you know, taking orders from a head coach. So I don't know how much some of these names have been out there, but, you know, a guy like Nathaniel Hackett, who's the offensive coordinator in Green Bay, Alex Van Pelt has the same position in Cleveland, and Pete Carmichael, who has the same position in New Orleans. I haven't texting that the Seahawks are interested in them, but here's why I think that makes sense, for the Seahawks. They all come from offenses that are pretty run heavy, you know, compared to NFL. And you know, Pete Carroll wants to run the ball. They all ran the ball pretty well last season. All three of those coordinators work to call the plays. So you've got to wonder, you know, if you're going to lure a coordinator away from his current job, there's got to be something for him. In those cases, it would be a chance to call plays, which they don't have the opportunity to do right now. So again, I don't know if any of those guys are on the Seahawks radar, but I just think those three guys fit the profile of what would make sense for the Seahawks.
So during the off season, they're not obligated to tell you anything about surgeries and injuries and things. Is that right? I mean, it's only during the season. What do we know about like the health? I mean, we understand that Jamal Adams is getting his labrum repaired, and I guess he had a couple fingers and things like that. But it seemed like they were relatively healthy going into the off season.
The issue that Pete Carroll, and he didn't volunteer this, we had asked him about it, but he said that Bruce Irvin recently had another knee procedure to follow up, on the ACL surgery that he had from that injury he had in week two. And so, the word from Carroll was that, you know, Irvin is now behind schedule from what he would have been. Now he's a free agent. So, that was one that Carroll gave us. And I do believe that Adams had both of his surgeries, just based on pictures he's posted on his Instagram account of him in a, you know, with a big cast on his left hand and his left shoulder in a sling. So, and I know Carroll said that those surgeries were going to happen soon. So those are the two that come to mind. But yeah, they don't typically, you know, send out announcements on who gets surgery and whatnot like that in the off season.
It's fun. I don't know if you saw AJ Morrow was showing us AJ Brown, the receiver for Tennessee. I mean, sometimes the players volunteer the information, but he was coming out of a surgery and he was filming himself and he was not right in his mind.
He was still under the influence.
He was a little loopy from the surgery. So, but yeah, it's funny how you'll see every once in a while guys sending it out. I guess they're volunteering the information. I don't know.
Yeah. That usually happens on Instagram, and it's accompanied by, you know, some sort of inspirational quote. So that's typically how you find out about those in the offseason, as opposed to the team announcing it.
Brady, how surprised were you with the Shoddy move? I think we were kind of surprised. It felt like if they were going to move on from a coordinator, it might have been their defensive coordinator in Ken Norton, who, again, if we're being, not a personal thing, but if we're being honest, the defense statistically has gotten worse every year that he's been here, and they were historically bad for the first half of this season. So Any surprise that he hasn't come under more scrutiny from the coaching staff there, and it was ultimately Shoddy, the one leaving, when he was, you know, in charge of the offense that put up the most points in the history of this organization?
Yeah, well, definitely if you would have asked me that at midseason and you would have told me, or if you would have told me at midseason that Schottenheimer was the one who was going to be gone and Norton would be staying, then I would tell you that maybe you're sucking too much of that laughing gas or whatever the, whatever anesthesia, whatever that is. I would say that it, you know, it was a little surprising to me that Schottenheimer, you know, that they parted ways with him, but also it makes sense, you know, in retrospect, just seeing, you know, how that offense took a nosedive in the second half of the season, and how, you know, hearing Carroll's remarks after the season about how he wished they would have adjusted better to the way that defenses started playing them. And, you know, it makes sense in retrospect when you hear Carroll talk about a lack of adjusting. And I do think that that was a big part of why they moved on. And, you know, some of the stuff that Carroll was talking about how they, you know, defenses started playing too deep, you know, with two deep safeties against them. I mean, I looked some of that stuff up, and we have this, you know, fancy database at ESPN where you can chart stuff like that. And, you know, the three highest percentages of two high safety that Wilson faced this season were the Rams, the Giants, and then the Rams again. And those were the three worst performance, you know, three worst games in terms of QBR of the season. And so I think, you know, there's the thought in the building that the Giants game, whatever that was, week 13, that really presented a template for defenses to start defending the Seahawks, and that the Seahawks just didn't adjust to that the way that they should have. And so now that said, I still think that, you know, I have gotten the impression, and I've run this by people, you know, connected to that situation, and this was their read as well, which is that, you know, I don't think Pete Carroll, when he had that press conference or whatever that was 2 days after the season ended, when he was on, you know, the morning show on your station and then talked to us, I don't think that he knew that Schottenheimer was not going to be the coordinator at that point. I think that he had some pretty specific, you know, he knew he was going to have a pretty difficult conversation with Schottenheimer, and maybe knew that Schottenheimer was going to push back. And I think that's what happened. I think that they had a meeting, and Schottenheimer, you know, Carroll laid out exactly how he wants the offense run, and I don't think Schottenheimer went for it. And so I think that's why they moved on. I don't think Carroll's mind was made up right when the season ended.
Brady, great stuff, man. Always fun to talk to you. Thanks so much for the time, and we'll talk soon.
Okay, thanks, fellas. Thanks for having me. Take care.
There you go. Brady Henderson of ESPN.com covers the Seahawks for ESPN.com. Good to talk to him. Coming up, Nick Wright of Fox's First Things First had some extremely scorching hot takes. Hot takes, Dave. I know how you love those. On Pete Carroll today. So we'll get into what he had to say coming up with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
This hour of Wyman and Bob is brought to you by Oswego Mortgage. Coming up at 4 o'clock, the professor, John Clayton, will join us on the program, so stay tuned for that. As we told you, a lot of people out there with the scorching hot takes, Dave. That's a thing. That's a thing. Say crazy things. Get attention. You know, sort of like Colin Cowherd out there saying, you know, they should just halt the playoffs until Patrick Mahomes is ready to go.
Stacy was saying today on their show, and I was listening when I was driving in on Stacy and Jake, that, is it Jake and Stacy?
It's Jake and Stacy.
Sorry. Yeah. Sorry, Jake.
Wow.
Or Stacy.
What an insult.
Yeah. But, you know, she was saying that she likes him. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
You like him?
I sent her a text. I said, Stacy, no!
Yeah.
No.
Well, I mean, look, if you're looking at it from, I'm like, he's probably sitting there thinking, like, when you and I are reacting to him, like, what an idiot. And he's like,
yep,
thank
got
you.
Him.
Yes,
got him.
I gotcha. But yeah, I mean, he's saying that whenever Patrick Mahomes is ready, then we can play. Like on a Tuesday, maybe, or a Wednesday.
How do you think the Bills would feel about that? They'd be like, oh, okay, yeah, take your time.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, go ahead. Whatever helps you guys. We're on board, coach. Jeez. Anyway, so Nick Wright. I'm not familiar with Nick Wright, I don't think. I'm sure I've seen him, but by name. Anyway, he's Fox's First Things First. Talking about the Seattle front office needs to ask Pete if he's willing to modernize the offense. And if not, they've got a tough choice to make.
So I don't know what you do, Seattle, but I do know this, John Schneider
yeah.
and the Allen family. You have a talk with Pete Carroll, and you ask him if he wants to modernize the offense. And if he doesn't, and he's stubborn in his approach, then you might have to have a very uncomfortable conversation with Pete Carroll about whether or not it makes sense there, because you cannot sour the well on the relationship with the best player in franchise history, Russell Wilson.
You know what my first question to Nick would be? Define modernize. What does that mean?
It means throw the ball a lot.
Be creative?
I don't know.
Again,
it's a very general term.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't know. Look, you know what he's saying? He's saying call plays that work.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he's saying. I mean, look, some
call
of the
plays
things
that make Russell happy, that make DK happy, that make
the
fans happy on some level. I don't know. It is such a general term.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Well, and I guess somebody, you know, here's what I would say. So, and this is probably too, you know, I don't want to say too technical or anything, but, it, you know, maybe it's not great radio, whatever. But, you know, the blocking scheme, when you have Chris Carson lined up next to you and you do that handoff to him where you kind of ride it. And I know sometimes it's an RPO, you know, and they're looking to see, because a lot of times you'll see the receivers. I don't know if you noticed this. Kansas City got an offside or a legal man downfield because they ran an RPO, and what happened was, which is a run-pass option that only the quarterback knows, really, what the play is going to be. If he sees something, he'll hand the ball off if he thinks there's an opportunity. But if he sees a wide receiver wide open, he will keep the ball. And the offensive lineman will continue to block downfield thinking it's a run.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, but what Mahomes did is he did a pump fake and waited a little bit and then threw it. That ball has to come out right now because then your lineman will be downfield. So, but yeah, I just, that kind of sideways running motion. And look, I know that it's worked a little bit here and there, but I just like, I think offensive linemen too, they like just downhill, what's called gap scheme, I guess. It's more like man-to-man, man-on-man blocking. You don't start off with a double team and then one guy takes over the block at the line of scrimmage and the other guy goes up to the linebacker.
Right.
You know, it's more like you block him. You know, you see a lot of, like, down blocks with a pull, and then, you know, you lead with a fullback. That's old school stuff. That's old school stuff. So there's nothing modern about it. Nothing modern. But still, I mean, you know, define what that means. And, you know, so, I mean, if you ask me, that would be one specific thing that I right. would like to see a little bit more. But, you know, I'm not sure what he is really, you know, referring to.
Maybe it's more about how, and you've pointed out how creative the 49ers are with a very run-first offense, right? They really managed Garoppolo when he was in there. He wasn't a guy they were just, hey, cut it loose, Jimmy, chuck it all over the place. Let's see what happens.
Exactly.
See if the football gods love you. That's not how it worked. There was a lot of misdirection. There was creativity within what is considered an old school scheme of run the ball.
Right, and you know, if you go back to 2019, everybody of course loves. I mean, Kansas City's not a run first at all. I mean, look, they're throwing it, but you know, it's easy when you have Patrick Mahomes. And by the way, it's not easy. It's just easier.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then you know who went to the Super Bowl? The Chiefs doing that, and the 49ers doing what they do,
mm-hmm.
and that was running the ball. And a lot of times it's about just overwhelming somebody at the point of attack. And mentioned this, you know, you pull a guard, you put heavy personnel in there. Some of these, you know, look at Baltimore. Sometimes they will report two offensive linemen. That's what the Patriots did. And then you put tight ends in there, and then you're running with a fullback. I mean, you just got, it's just beef out on the field. And then, you know,
just a mountain of man meat.
Yeah. And then you bring a guy in motion and then he leads up and then you throw a fullback up in there. There's nothing modern about that. So it's just mystifying to me when people say that. And then the other thing, well, listen to another of these cuts, because I mentioned this earlier to Brady about how, you know, how all of a sudden Pete is old.
Here's Nick Wright continuing with him. Got a couple cuts. Why would you empower a 70-year-old past his prime over a quarterback in his prime?
If you are deciding not to empower your future first ballot Hall of Fame Super Bowl champion quarterback, and instead further empower your soon-to-be 70-year-old head coach to play the game the way he thinks it should be played rather than modern NFL football, I think you're going to have a major issue.
First of all, why is he yelling? Who's he yelling at?
Who's he talking to there?
I don't know. I'm not familiar with him.
Whoever
with the show,
it is,
to be honest, but
he's on with Brandon Marshall. So Brandon Marshall was saying all that stuff yesterday. They don't like the Seahawks right now.
Yeah. Well, that's because Brandon Marshall couldn't make the team here. So
And then I thought he was helping out Trey Flowers and stuff. But then there were some things that happened on the sidelines that we heard that maybe he wasn't the greatest teammate and some things going on there. So maybe he has it in for the Seahawks.
This feels very reminiscent. We got one more to play here in a second, but of when things go bad, you start leaning on the old complaints, if you will. Russell's too short, right? And this is, again, we're speaking about the vocal minority. This isn't everybody now is chanting the same thing or singing the same song. It's just you started to see it when it sort of disappeared, the whole Russell being too short thing. We saw it today on the text. Now Pete's too old. All we've ever said about Pete is he's the youngest, at the time, 67-year-old, 68-year-old, 69. He's younger acting. He's got a younger attitude, a younger approach, a guy who's all about, this peace and harmony in the locker room, letting these guys just be who they are personality-wise. He's involved in social issues. He's about as young as you could be for a guy who's going to be 70 years old. That's his claim to fame, his energy, his youth, his youthful approach. And now we're looking at it going, guy's a relic. He's a fossil. He's playing football from the 40s. It becomes convenient, I think. When things don't go right, you can lean on the old things.
Well, and the thing is,
no pun intended.
Yeah. Well, and then the other thing is one of the problems was that they didn't stick with the run this year. And now Pete's talking about getting back to it. Like Ray said, and we had him on yesterday, Ray Roberts, that there was games where they didn't run back to back twice in a row. So, he wants to get back to that. But guess what? Ask the Cleveland Browns how valuable the run is. I mean, I know they lost in the divisional round, but beating Pittsburgh, and they were the number three rushing team last year, and that's what helped get them. That's what got them to the playoffs, I would say.
One more quickly before the break. Here he is talking about Adam Gase. I have a feeling based on the labeling of this cut, I agree with him. But let's see. Here he is talking about Adam Gase.
This right here is a bubbling, massive story. And it was a bubbling, massive story before the name Adam Gase got involved with it. But now, Wilds, that Adam Gase's name is involved with it, I feel like we are on the brink of a disaster in Seattle, not that dissimilar from the one we're seeing play out in Houston.
All right. Well, maybe it's not a bubbling, massive story. Maybe I don't completely agree. But just in his overall disagreement with Adam Gase being a positive element to the search, I think that name coming up only brought out negative feelings.
They look at everybody.
Yeah, nobody saw his name come up, whether it's on the text, whether it was on Twitter, or even people writing about it and said, you know what? I like this. I didn't see that anywhere. All it did is bring up what? They're talking to who? Why? It brought up that sort of reaction. So, and then it left people like you and Brady to defend, hey, they're just talking to people. They're kicking the tires. They're not seriously going to consider this guy, or, even if they are, don't you trust their, you got into those sort of defenses.
I do like what came out of this is that you said that that's a tire that doesn't deserve to be kicked.
Yeah.
I like that one.
Yeah, that's right. He hasn't earned that kicking. All right. Coming up, Philip Rivers has announced his retirement, and today it sparked a story time in Dave. We've got a little story time coming your way with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
This hour of Wyman and Bob is brought to you by Oswego Mortgage. Coming up at the top of the hour, the Professor John Clayton will join us on the program, so make sure you stay tuned for that. Meanwhile, we've got an edition of story time based on the retirement of Philip Rivers after 17 seasons, 15 more than Dave Wyman thought he'd have in this league.
Well, actually 17 more.
Yeah, you thought he wouldn't even get through that first season.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of an interesting story. First of all, I had a blast doing this. This is 2004. So when I retired in 95, or they did.
when they retired you.
Yeah, they retired me. I held on for 96. I even worked out in 97. And so, I came back after a workout with the Packers in 97 and laid out, stretched out on my living room floor. And I proclaimed, it's over. I told my wife, she go, how'd it go? And I was like, I was tired. I was sore. I'm like, it's over. So then I went down and filed my papers for my retirement probably a week later. And, yeah, I went to one of those, like, mail places, you know, and I go, this is my retirement party from the NFL, and handed the guy the envelope, and he looked at me like, whatever, dude.
Yeah, it's like I get all kinds of crazy people in here. Go.
Yeah, so anyway, that's how it ended. So I hated football for 5-6 years.
You were mad at the game?
I was. How could they go on without me, Bob?
Did you watch it?
Yeah, not really. Monday
night football, nothing.
Just didn't care for it, yeah. The only one I watched was, I was really happy the year after I left the Broncos when they had the best record in the NFL and they lost to Jacksonville in the playoffs. So I was like, if they go to the Super Bowl the year after I leave, then that's really going to hurt. But then they went the next year.
Yeah.
So, and then the next year after that. But yeah, so I started to get back into football, and I had a good buddy at the time, Terry Wooden, who was a linebacker for the Seahawks out of Syracuse, and he was a scout for the Bills. So he said, hey, you know, if you want to go and get a job in the NFL as a scout, whatever, the Senior Bowl is, there's that and the Combine. He said they're a little bit more strict, but he got me a pass. So I went down and I got a hotel room in his hotel, and, you know, he got me a pass to just go wherever any of the coaches could go. And I remember seeing Mike Tice. Remember the old, you know, tight end for the Seahawks? Tice, you know.
Your belly deli.
Exactly, yeah. And Minnie Merritt was his horse, by the way. He had a racehorse that we would always go and watch run. But, you know, I remember the first thing he said to me is, he goes, all right, you want a job. What do you want? So, because that's where everybody goes to get jobs, the Senior Bowl. But anyway, so I'm sitting there with the scouts, the other guys, the guys that Terry's kind of helping me try to get in there. And it was 04, and the 04 Senior Bowl, Philip Rivers was the quarterback out of North Carolina State. And so I'm watching him. And I'm just going, man, that guy's got a weird release, you know? And so they were asking me about what I thought about different players. Anybody remember Nico Koutavidis?
No.
He was a linebacker for the Seahawks that was there. And he was one of those guys that was like a goal line guy that, like, he wasn't a great linebacker, but he would smash you in the head. And I remember seeing that and saying, I like that guy and that feature. But I said, yeah, you know, that Philip Rivers guy, I just don't think that kind of release is going to work in the NFL. How many? Okay, so how many?
I'm guessing you might not have been alone in that. Just in your defense, yeah. I think if you're one of these guys that talks about arm talent and really talks about footwork and talks about all these things that are really, you know, aesthetically pleasing in somebody's form, I'm guessing there were probably a few people looking at the way Philip Rivers threw the ball and went, "Wait, what is he doing?"
Yeah. Well, and these guys, and by the way, they were like practicing like in high schools. This is in Mobile, Alabama. And Mobile, Alabama, like the airport there, was like maybe 4, you know, jets took off every day or something like that. And, you know, everywhere you looked, like I sat in a bar with Mike Martz and had this long conversation with him, you know, and he was just the nicest, coolest guy in the world. But like you'd see Jack Del Rio. And I mean, every coach, it was like a who's who in this tiny little town. You know, you'd look across the street and see a guy like Tom Flores walking down the street. So, yeah, I mean, it was really a cool experience. But yeah, again, 63,440 yards ago, Philip Rivers, and 421 touchdowns, and both of those are number 5 in NFL history. But one of the things I texted Jake today and confirmed with him, I said, I'll bet you he has a lower release point than Russell Wilson. And he said, yeah, he said he does. He's got, you know, so, I mean, here he is. What is he, 6'3"? And, you know,
Phillip?
He's... Yeah.
Yeah.
But
6'4", maybe. Yeah.
Yeah. And he's got this kind of weird sidearm thing that he's got going that works in the NFL. But it just proves that, you know, look, when we saw a couple of shots from down on the field with Aaron Rodgers the other day in that game, that he's looking for passing lanes. And that's, you know, the same thing with any quarterback. You're not just standing there, first of all, looking over a guy like David Bakhtiari.
6'5" is what he's listed at, actually.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, a tall guy, but yet, the way he throws the ball, it makes him a shorter quarterback. So, and you know, you can't tell me that extra 6 inches or whatever it is going to allow you to see over the top of a big defensive lineman or offensive lineman. So, you know, and that's the thing. And it hasn't been a flood of texts or anything about Russell is too short.
Yeah, just a few here and there.
But there's been a few here and there, and I'm like, I can't even believe that's cropping up again. So, but
yeah, it's, you know, you got to blame something.
Right.
There's a reason why a 12-4 team and a guy who started out the season as the front runner for the MVP through the first half, and they're scoring almost 35 points a game, and it all fell apart. Why? Why? I need answers. Well, let's just go for the easy low hanging fruit. Oh, he's too short.
Yeah.
That's why they can't run any of the quick hitters, right? Any of the a little slant, little roll out, any of this. Mm-hmm. You know, he can't see. He's got to roll out of the pocket in order to be able to see it. But as you said, I think that's true for the majority of the quarterbacks.
Right.
If they're going to get a clear vision of the entire field, if you're standing behind, I don't know, DJ Fluker when he was here, you're going to have to move. The guy's a building. I don't care if you're Philip Rivers at 6'5", or if you're Russell or Kyler Murray or Aaron Rodgers, you're going to have to move out of the way. He's blocking part of your vision.
Right. So, and by the way, looking at this Drew Brees, 80,358 yards. Tom Brady, 79,204. You mentioned he wants to play till he's 45, so he's probably going to be there. Number 23, I already asked you this one.
Yeah.
Number 23 on the list, Dave
and
Craig.
I got it.
Dave Craig, yeah. I said, well, it might be somebody we have on the show. That narrowed it down.
Yeah, it did.
How many yards? we have Russell. Russell's on the list, though.
How tall's Dave? What is he, 6'1"?
Oh, yeah, 6 feet tall, maybe, 6'1". Yeah, and what did you say, Deshaun Watson? They have
6'2". He's listed at 6'2", which means he's probably 6'1.5".
Yeah,
you know they always round up.
Right. So, but anyway, yeah, I just thought that was interesting. But it kind of miss, you know, Rivers. The thing I always said about him is watching him yell on the field. It's something about the way his mouth moves and his teeth or something. I just like. I want to put one of these, Bob, a fist right in his suckhole.
Yeah.
So it just, you know, but I do admire the fact that he's a really nice guy off the field.
Yeah.
Does
by all accounts,
things.
A great guy.
Yeah. He's got 11 kids, 10, or maybe it's 9. Yeah. Because remember she stopped at double digits.
Before double digits.
Yeah. But I mean, and that's how you're supposed to be. And he's kind of a punk on the field.
Yeah.
So, but you know, that's what you do. I just am surprised that a D lineman hasn't hauled off and hit him or something like that. Remember?
He's a tough guy because he, in terms of enduring, he tore his ACL and played the rest of that game. Remember that a few years ago?
Wow. I don't remember that.
Yeah, he did. He tore his ACL in a game and continued playing that game. I mean, I give him credit, man. He had a heck of a career.
I don't think he's missed a game since his second year in the league. He hasn't. I mean, it may be a playoff game, but, I mean, I'm looking from 2006 to 2020, games started, it's 16s all the way down. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, it's just going to be one of those guys that you miss, seeing on the weekend when they retire. But good for him. Good long career.
All right. Good stuff there with Dave Wyman. Coming up, the professor will join us, talk about the latest name being floated around as a possibility for that Seahawks offensive coordinator position. Talk to him about that. You guys can ask him whatever you'd like. We'll go through, sift through your questions, find the best ones, and fire a couple at him. So text those in to 710-710, the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. The professor will join us next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.